Mormons abandon the GOP en masse. I'm Brian King on the left.
Facebook leaves a city for a village. This is Dan McKay on the right.
Governor Herbert with a stunning 41-point lead over Democratic challenger Mike Weinholz. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and on the political right, I'm joined in the studio by Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the political left by Representative Brian King. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
Great to have the House represented here and the Senate's not in the room.
Well, that's the way we like it.
That's what I hear.
Brian and I have decided we just don't need them.
That's what I hear. Hey, I don't know where your loyalties land, but we had a big football game last week in this state. I thought we ought to just take a second and talk about BYU's play call on that last play. Did you like that,
You know,
Brian?
I can't fault him. I thought that Satake was a stand-up guy at the end when he said, hey, I mean, people were second-guessing him, and he said, no, I'd do it over again. I sort of looked at that and thought, well, I could argue either side of that thing. But I'll tell you, it was an ugly game.
Whether you were a U fan or a Cougar fan. You've been in Europe,
yep.
Dan. You missed all the festivals.
I did watch highlights from my hotel room, though, because it was worth it.
Okay. Well, the opening play was a pick six. What we say?
Yeah.
A pick six. And it just was terrible the whole game. But at the same time, the U fans, and I count myself among them, we love our team. But I think U fans are going to like the Y a little better with Satake at the top.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, since they aren't in the same conference, it's easier as a U fan to root for the Y when they aren't playing each other, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, let's do some local news here. We had the situation with the High School Athletic Association and the State School Board and football players, any sports, high school sports, who want to transfer to propel their athletic career. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to hit a crisis point in the last week. Do you think the right decision was made, Dan?
A decision was made, and they made some compromise to kind of look at some things and study some things and bring in the governance of the High School Sports Association a little bit closer to the State School Board, which I thought was probably a good decision.
Uh-huh.
I think the State School Board, though, and I mentioned this before, they got a little taste of how much people care about athletics. I was talking to Jefferson Moss of the State School Board about an hour ago. We were just talking about some other things. And I asked him how that debate went while I was out of town. And he said, I've never received more hate mail. I've never had more people politically active or involved on any issue, including the Common Core or anything else we've done as a state board. I receive more input on the State High School Sports Association than I did on anything else while I've been a member of this board for 4 years.
Wow.
That tells you. People care more about sports than they do their religion. I've made that claim before. And it is true, and it's really, really, in my mind, as the academic, I think it's a little sad.
I had two children play high school sports, and I was given good advice early, and that was to check your feelings at the door, before any of this. You had some experience with this, Brian?
Well, a little. I mean, in the sense that we go to the East High games, which is my school. But, here's the reality. This is community for people. This is what they do on Friday night. We're not Texas. We don't do Friday Night Lights the same way they do. But there is a large group of people that every Friday night they show up to the high school football or basketball games, depending on what the season is. And they watch the kids. They watch the kids in their local churches. They watch the kids in their local neighborhoods. And they just want to see how these kids are doing. It's a community event. And I think sometimes we miss that because it's not just the football.
Yeah.
Or the basketball. It's not just the sports. It's the thing that binds people together at a local level.
Yeah. Stay on a little bit more local news. We got word this week that Facebook has made their choice. They're going to go to Los Lunas, New Mexico.
Au revoir.
Good riddance.
Both the left and right from the House have spoken.
No, I think we have to unfriend them on this. I mean, seriously, I thought we voted. We were talking earlier right before we went on air. Dan and I, we both voted for this at the legislature, but what we were voting for was a relatively narrow sliver of the pie in terms of the economic incentive. And when you add on to what we did at the legislative level, what they were talking about from the county and what they were talking about from the school district and what they were talking about from West Jordan City, you really see, and I think this is what Mayor McAdams was saying, that we were getting played a little bit in terms of the amount of money that we were giving up to Facebook, and they were just, you know, playing one off against the other and adding it all up. And I think that's why a lot of people, me included, kind of got to a point where we thought, you know, we don't need to play this game.
Yeah, really interesting.
And McAdams is getting, you know, in the Tribune, he's getting some heat for, or at least Wes Jordan was pointing the finger at McAdams and saying, You
messed this deal
you
up.
You messed this up, you know, that kind
you
of
played
deal.
Politics.
You
know,
played
they think
politics.
He did it for private gain, yeah. Which isn't the Ben McAdams I know.
Look, I'm not going to make – I know this is an election year, but I just – look, I think Ben was right on this issue. And I'll tell you what was crazy about it is, as I've talked to a lot of the players involved in the deal, and our legislative interim committees meet next week. You're welcome to come. Everybody who's listening wants a second dose of politics. You're welcome to come to
next
interim
Wednesday.
Day. Next Wednesday. While we're going to spend some time on this Facebook deal and our economic incentive deals, and one of the complaints I heard was that this deal was pitched by one of the entities and was put in concrete by one of the entities and told all the entities it was take it or leave it.
Yeah.
And all of those other entities said, well, wait a minute, we have other considerations that you didn't think about. And the statement from you know, one of the other entities that was kind of creating the deal was saying, too bad.
Yeah.
And I think in my mind, I think this deal came into interpersonal relationships about the deal in addition to how the deal was finally formulated. But I think McAdams is right to push back.
Well, and we have this situation. You see it among the states, and we saw it here at the intragovernmental level within the state of Utah, a race to the bottom in terms of trying to outcompete each other as to how sweet a deal you can offer some of these huge companies. Look, it's corporate welfare is all it really is when you get right down to it in many ways.
Interesting. I have a feeling, I'll just say this from the political center, that we're going to hear from Facebook again.
Yeah.
And I just say that because we have an attractive enough workforce and low electric rates and great location, and we just might hear back from those folks.
Yeah, and you know, it may be that that's fine. If they want to come back and recognize that we can't be rolled so quickly and so easily,
you'll
then
take
fine
it.
Talking
maybe
to them again.
Maybe the deal's different.
Maybe the deal is different, and maybe we say no again.
Yeah, Brian, you are a House Minority Leader, a leader in the Democratic Party. We don't always get to have you on the show. Tell us your latest read of the Herbert Weinholz race. The latest polls are showing Herbert with a 41-point lead.
Yeah, he's taken off to Canada on a trade mission. He's that confident. Well, listen, I've always felt badly about this because if people knew Mike Weinholz.
Sorry.
If people knew Mike.
That just caught me in the right but wrong way, right? This race is so tight, the governor's gone to Toronto. So anyway.
Well, if people knew Mike Weinholz, they would think really hard about not voting for him because he is an impressive guy. He's got a great resume.
Complete gentleman.
That's
what I've noticed about him. Served on a board with him.
Quality guy.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think it's Forbes or one of the business magazines, national business magazines, has voted over and over and over again. They've chosen CHG Health, the company that he was the CEO of for many, many years, as being one of the best companies to work for across the entire country. He does right by his employees. He does right by his customers. That business has thrived. If you want to look at a business guy, a person who comes in with a business background and experience to run the state, you can't get a better candidate than Mike Weinholz. And people don't know that about him.
Yeah. You know, I have a great friendship with Governor Herbert. I appreciate his, you know, the way he makes data-driven decisions. He's a numbers guy in my experience and everything. I don't like that we don't have enough competition at the gubernatorial level. And all I mean by that is we don't have this marketplace of ideas going on, and there's not these enlivening debates. And if you had to tell me the difference in the two candidates, I can't really point to it right now.
Yeah.
Because there's just nothing being said or going on.
Other than one's an incumbent and one's not.
Yeah, and one's in Toronto and one's a
Democrat.
And one's wife does recreational marijuana. You know, I mean, it's just like, what does that have to do with our future?
Yeah.
And so if I had a wish, it would be, how do we get you know, competition going for the highest elected office in our state.
Yeah.
Well, we have a lot of, I mean, we haven't talked about national stuff. I know we're going to talk about that probably after the break, so.
Yeah, we'll do that. Let's do one more thing that's just sort of interesting here. Actually, I think we will just go to the next. It's a more complicated topic than that.
We always get these great ideas, and then Ross says, no, you're not.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined by Brian King and Dan McKay. I'm Natalie Gochner. In our next segment, we will talk about the presidential race.
I'm Dan McKay on the right.
I'm Brian King on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We're going to talk about the presidential race, but there was a really interesting poll that came out that talked about members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and their leanings politically. Back in 2012, when Mitt Romney was at the top of the ticket, the Pew Center found 60% of the members of the Mormon Church said they were Republicans. That number is now 48%.
I love it.
Brian, that's great news
for
you.
How can we not like that, Dan? Dan, you're with me on this, aren't you? This is great news.
This is why the Clinton campaign's showing love in the state of Utah.
Well, listen, seriously, I mean, it's hard, I think, for people to look at the standard bearer for today's Republican Party, Donald Trump, and go, yeah, this is what we agree with as LDS church members. I think that's hard. What is interesting to me is the degree to which you have people sort of saying, I'm a Republican through and through. It doesn't matter what Donald Trump does or says. I'm still voting Republican. In some ways, what's more surprising is that the number isn't significantly lower than 48%, given his bad behavior.
Dan, I know you hate talking the T word on this program, but Trump.
Like putting Brian in timeout.
Just,
that's what I thought.
Yeah, just respond to that because, I mean, I really love Greg Hughes. He's a great guy. Speaker of the House, you know?
Yeah.
I saw a picture on Facebook this week of when he was on an LDS mission in Australia, and it just was so, it warmed my heart. It was just, he's just a great guy. Yeah. And he's a big Trump supporter, and I get it because he has a personality like Trump.
Uh-huh.
And they just,
I can see that.
They have some consistencies about it.
I don't know if we talked about it last week, but. You know, he had a little dust up on social media with Governor Herbert
over
the Trump issue
and
called him out.
He's supporting him, yeah. And so I understand Greg Hughes and his Trump allegiance because they are similar to me.
Right.
I could never support Donald Trump at the top of the Republican ticket of my party because I'm so offended by him. And I think he does not represent anything I would like except for his straight talk.
He's not a Republican.
I like his straight talk, but I can't. I mean, he has no depth in his policies. He's offended women. He's offended Hispanics.
He's offended everybody equally.
Yeah.
He's got that. He's
and
an equal
I don't consider it leadership, what he's doing.
Yeah.
I think
why
it's,
don't people see through the fact that he's just an entertainer at best, a con man at worst?
So I count myself among the LDS faithful who would, you know, not. It's a matter of conscience to me. That's not my, you know,
well, and you're
president
not alone.
Chief.
You're not alone. I mean, you look at Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox. He hasn't said much lately, but he was pretty loud and proud for several months before saying, I am a never Trump guy. He's not my guy.
So we got to hear from the political
but
right
see,
here.
I would wonder, okay, so I'm just, again, I'm jaded politics right guy, and I'm looking at the numbers and I'm saying, well, hey, you got 60% the year of Mitt Romney. What was it the 4 years before that?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that Mitt Romney brought a lot. Let's just talk about it as a sampling of the brethren, right?
Okay.
So you've got the 12 members of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the number, but it was something like 8 of them were registered Republicans as of the primary, and 6 of them were registered Republicans immediately after the primary. In other words, 2 had unaffiliated,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a show that in 2012 there was this major push for everybody to support our standard bearer Mitt Romney,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody thought that the political cape was really long, and he was going to drag a windfall of new people into the legislature and everybody else over, you know, over Mitt Romney's coattails. Mia Love wasn't supposed to have a hard race at all,
mm-hmm,
because Mitt Romney was the top of the ticket and all those things. I think when you look at this number, I'd like to know what the 2008 number was in the John McCain race. And when everybody's saying, well, it's ebbing and flowing, I think 2012 was probably its all-time high. I wouldn't be surprised if 48 is pretty close to an all-time low. And or maybe not an all-time low, but most recent low.
Yeah.
And you could look at maybe 51, 52, 53, somewhere in there, percentage of what the average or what the norm rate would be. Because I would bet that based on this, I don't think people are more Mormon or more Republican or less Republican because of it. It's who's willing to say they are because of how much they support Trump. There's a lot of people who don't, and I get that.
Yeah, yeah. Brian, I have to ask you about the basket of deplorables.
so
this is – some people are calling this such a damaging comment that it's equivalent to Mitt Romney's, you know, 48% comment.
Yeah. I don't think that's true. But, you know, she'd been saying it apparently for 2 or 3 weeks from what I'd heard. But the thing that she said on this one particular occasion is she assigned half as the number of the deplorables, right?
Uh-huh. Now, so if Trump supporters, half of them are
In this basket. Now, if she just said some of them are in what I call a basket of deplorables, we wouldn't be talking about this because we'd all say, yeah, well, that's true. Mm-hmm. Because some leaves you, is it 20%, is it 40%, maybe it's 60%. She's not going to be pinned down if she says some. But when she assigns half, that allows people to say, well, that's unfair. And then compare it to Mitt Romney, the 47% number.
Yeah.
You're right. And people are anxious to sort of turn the tables on the Democrats on
it's
that.
It's so strange to me that elected officials think it's ever in their interest to talk bad about voters.
About any voter.
Yeah, whether it's yours
there
or not.
There was a representative one time when I was committing, something about a committee hearing about a bill that I was presenting or whatever. And I remember a representative.
Dan starts out this way, I always think he's going to say something bad about me.
No, it wasn't you. It was someone else. And another representative said, well, if that's the way the voters feel, then the voters are stupid. And his opponent used it, and he was out.
Really? Oh, I see.
Well,
yeah.
Because you can't say stuff like that. You may think it at times,
but you can't say it. Does this, Natalie, fall into the 47% comment by Romney? I don't know if it's as detrimental.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I think the basket of deplorables, that is something that's going to resonate with people, and they're going to say
it's pretty colorful.
It's pretty colorful.
It was inartful. But, I was reading Charles Blow in the New York Times, the columnist for the New York Times, and Blow said, hey, we ought to defend this. She ought to defend this. She's right. And then he went through a bunch of poll numbers. Then he went through a bunch of poll numbers saying 62% of the Republican supporters of Trump are, you know, say racist stuff or something like that. And I thought, well, let's.
So, Dan, you have been in Europe having a nice vacation with your great wife. You had to have seen the news clip of Senator Clinton and stumbling and, you know, being diagnosed now with pneumonia. And I have just rolled that tape through in my mind a few times because on the one hand, I'm thinking, why didn't she stay home if she's that sick? And then on the other hand, I'm thinking, it's 9/11. It's New York. She was a senator, you know, during this time.
Yeah.
So I know she was pushing herself. But
well, and is there an element to the gender thing saying women particularly push through this kind of stuff?
Yeah,
lest
yeah.
they be labeled as, they're the weak.
Yeah. Well, and we're just, you know, we're just tough that way, I think. But I got to tell you, I did not like seeing it, meaning it, you know, it obviously doesn't feel very presidential.
Yeah.
Now, it reminded me of when Herbert Walker Bush, you know,
threw
up and he was sick in Japan or something.
Oh, yeah.
But did you see did they play it in Europe?
I saw it. I actually saw it on social media. I didn't see it.
Well, that would make sense.
The European news. I tell you, when I was when I watched the clip, my initial reaction was, how do I run and go help her? Because she obviously looked like
she was not doing well, right? Yeah,
all things being said, my instinct wasn't necessarily this is a bad political thing. My instinct was, there's someone in trouble. How do you go help? And I thought the Secret Service handled that well.
Yeah.
But it highlights the second thing, which is you can't hide from the cameras as a presidential candidate. I don't care who you are. Those days are over.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how insulated you are. If you,
It's not if the news covered it because you saw it on social media.
I saw the Secret Service. They actually have a protocol for how to handle when the candidate can't stand on their feet. And I read former Secret Service agents, critique of how the agents did and how they did an excellent job executing the protocol and doing those things for the candidate. All that stuff was true. But you can't hide the visceral reaction you get when you see
it just was not
the weak
presidential
in the knees type of deal.
Brian, what about – I mean,
it's tough for a candidate.
I just want to ask you this because I think it's so interesting. But Senator Clinton is more senior in years, but Donald Trump is even more senior.
Right. She's 68. He's 70.
Yeah, and then there's someone else even more senior than that. I can't remember who it is.
Bernie Sanders.
Okay, he's on. Yeah. Anyway, should that be an issue?
Oh, you know, I think you play it on a case by case basis. For some people, I think it's an issue. For others, not so much. Joe Biden, I think, is as old or older. And if Joe Biden had chosen to run, I don't think anybody would be talking about it with Joe Biden because he appears really vigorous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ronald Reagan was an older guy when he was elected, especially his second term. There were some people talking about it. And in hindsight, he may have been dropping off his last year or two in office.
No question about it, in my mind.
So I think that I don't have a problem talking about it. I mean, we've got a Senate candidate, or I should say potential Senate candidate in the form of Senator Hatch. He'll be well into his 80s by the time 2018 rolls around. If we can't talk about it with him, something's wrong.
Yeah. Are you one of those, Dan, that thinks that all these medical records should be publicly available to everyone?
No.
I you know what's interesting? I'm the same way. I just sort of like, I mean, I don't mind a doctor giving his opinion and saying some things, you know, give him a good bill of health, but I don't want to see everything. I just think that is her or his.
But again, you business. And I are on the same page, and I think Brian's here too. We'd like to see a little less political theater and a little more exchange of ideas.
Substance.
Right? Yeah. A little more substance, of course. Yeah. But that's because we're policy people. Most people don't want to see that. And so at the end of the day, because I look at the cry for Trump's tax records, and I say, I don't really care.
Okay. Now, this one I'm going to say timeout. Health records, I think, are more private. When you are a candidate for elected office and we fund government, I mean, you know, you have the strength of law to take those taxes from people. I mean, I think you need to see it.
Well,
taxes I want to see. I don't care about their –
why,
I care about their health,
just
but
curious.
I don't want to know
I want to know. I'll tell you why.
Thing.
I'll tell you why. Donald Trump has spent a long time talking about what a great businessman he is, how wealthy he is. And those tax returns tie right into this. A lot of the credibility issues that people have concerns about. So I think it's directly relevant to his statements as a candidate. And I do think it ties into, transparency and the tradition that every presidential candidate has had for a very long time. Even Mitt Romney, who for a while resisted disclosing that stuff, in the end he disclosed at least some of his tax returns because people kept pushing. I think that people have to say about Donald Trump, dude, you are so insistent on hiding this stuff. And the idea that you're under audit, everybody that is familiar with tax audit says, oh, that, come on, that's not a good reason. That's an excuse. What are you hiding, Donald?
Yeah. I just, I guess I'm not as concerned about people's puffery, right? And that's what I understand. Brian is the attorney, the good attorney in the room. And I'll say,
he's
in the
been
court
in court today. He's dressed up.
In the court of law, generally we don't make character an issue unless, the defense makes character an issue, right? Or the opposition makes character an issue. And then you can make character a big issue. And I guess Donald has bragged about his money, and therefore, as a result, we might be more curious. I'll just say this. I've never seen us glean from a tax return yet, from one side or the other. I have never seen, because they're all carefully grooming their tax returns.
I disagree.
I don't think we've ever gotten anything new out of
it. Here's what we got from Mitt Romney's tax returns. We got that for at least a year or two. I don't think there was a year for the tax returns that were disclosed that he paid more than 15%. He was under 15%. That's important from a public policy perspective. I want to know that if Mitt Romney's effective tax rate is lower than the janitor or than the school teacher or than, you and I, for that matter.
You and I both know that's not the case, though. There is nobody with a lower effective tax rate. I mean, we're the higher effective tax rate on that income based on. But I see what you mean.
I mean, but that's the point.
I see what you
should
get.
Should the 1% pay as a percentage of their income significantly less than what a working person does? I think that's a valid public policy discussion that we ought to have.
But Mitt Romney paying the tax versus his corporations paying the tax you're talking about Mitt Romney himself. And, that didn't show his roll-up corporations or any of these other things. They aren't pass-through entities. Sorry, we're a little wonky. But they aren't pass-through entities. So as a result, we don't know what his total tax liability was.
Yeah, no, I get your point.
And so I just think the smart ones who are actually
grooming their returns.
They groom them, and we only get what they want to see us anyway.
Hey, gentlemen, it's time for us to go to gripes. And we've had a lot of things that are gripey feeling on this show today. But, Dan, do you want to start us off with a gripe?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm a little upset to be back from vacation. I gotta be honest.
But you've been at the Louvre and Tuileries.
That has nothing to do with both sides of the aisle. Give us a political gripe for crying.
Oh, goodness. I was a little bummed that BYU did not pull it off and actually get
has
a little
has nothing
victory.
To do with ball. All right, Dan, I've got a good one. You're right, wasting my time.
You're here, Brian.
It's the false equivalence stuff. Come on. We see so much nonsense about Hillary's health and about Hillary's foundation, the Clinton Foundation. No attention or next to no attention about the Trump Foundation, Charitable Foundation, which is basically a con job, a fraud for people who look into it, whereas the Clinton Foundation is getting all the sorts of scrutiny, even though independent agencies have rated it as a very well-run, very efficient, and allocating a greater percentage of its revenue to charitable causes than most nonprofit charitable foundations.
But see, our gripes are supposed to be, they don't necessarily have to be political, Brian. My gripe is that your gripe was out of line today. I'm totally kidding.
You know, I had a couple of thoughts for gripes. I had a personal gripe. My daughter and her husband are moving to North Carolina. They've been with me all summer, so I'm losing a child, you know, but it's a good thing. But I'm going to miss them after seeing them. I also thought it was worth griping just for a second about Wells Fargo and the bad apples at Wells Fargo that did some dishonest things. And I know Wells Fargo's corporate values well enough as a company to know that that's a company that can recover from this. You know, they fired those employees. They've repaid the people that lost money. You know, they'll work with the regulators to figure out what went awry. But that's a sad deal.
Yeah.
That was not fun
well,
to see.
Well, you see how few bad apples can really damage a brand.
Sure can.
We allow 13 Democrats in the House of Representatives, and it just
12.
The few bad.
They're
animals.
Only 12, dude.
Oh well, I'm counting a Republican who should be, but whole other issue.
I'm gonna tell that Republican that you said that because I know who you have in mind.
I'm just kidding.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined on the left by Representative Brian King and on the right by Representative Dan McKay. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. We've had a good time today. We hope you've enjoyed listening.